Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Impact Factor. I am your host, Katie Van Aken, and this week I had a chance to talk to an old high school classmate of mine, Bern Fahey, who got her PhD in psychology and was also a college athlete. And it was a super interesting conversation, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Tell me a little bit about, I guess, when you went to undergrad, let's start there. Did you know what you wanted to study?
Kind of. I was an athlete in undergrad. I played lacrosse at American University. And I would say that was my primary focus, was playing lacrosse and where to go and where would be a good fit. I studied communications as my major, which I think was more of a general choice. And I chose psychology as my minor because I knew I was interested in psychology. And then, you know, that ended up being what I pursued ultimately for grad school.
Yeah. I assume, and maybe I shouldn't assume, but did you have any thoughts of continuing into a PhD when you were kind of early on in your undergrad?
No. Not at all. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I was very focused on my identity and my life as an athlete. And then when I started getting closer to graduating, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. But what I realized over the course of my undergrad was that I didn't like communications, but I still loved the psychology. So I decided to take the GMAT, I think it's called, I don't even remember, and pursue a master's in psychology. And then it wasn't until I was finishing up my master's and my advisor said to me, I think you'd be great in a PhD program. And by the way, it's funded when you get your PhD. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should do that. But it was never like a long-term goal of mine. It was more so an opportunity that presented itself at the moment. And I sort of weighed the pros and cons and I decided to keep going with it.
Yeah. And also, since it sounds like you just kind of wanted to pursue this other field that you had only sort of dabbled with for the minor.
Yes. Yeah, but you know what? Like a lot of my classes I didn't care for as an undergrad. But the psychology classes, just for whatever reason, I found it fascinating. And so then, without having any other clear direction, I just thought, like, let's just keep going with this and I'll. To be honest, it was almost a mechanism to delay having to make that choice.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, I will go to grad school and keep doing this thing that I am interested in. And then I'll figure out later what I'm going to do with my life.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Very cool. So you came into your PhD with a master's. Did you get them at the same place?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people, actually, this is maybe an assumption. I think maybe a lot of people have a PhD, but not the master's, but I took one semester in between the master's and going on to the PhD to decide if I wanted to do that. So technically I got a master's, took a one semester break and then continued on the PhD, both at Temple University. So the master's was like the first part of my PhD basically. And then I just kept building on that.
The next degree. So you did save time getting your master's, like it wasn't like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
It wasn't completely different. I stayed on the same subject, same school. So like, cool. I think 75% of my courses were credited towards the PhD. So like, yeah, it worked out in my favor.
Had you had any sort of research experience in undergrad?
Nothing real.
Yeah.
Like very basic. Yeah. like very basic, like how to do research.
Right. Yeah.
In like a psych 101 class, but no, nothing real.
Did you have to do that for your master's research? Like for your, did you have like a thesis?
I did not have a thesis for the master's. So truly going into the PhD program, I really had not conducted my own research ever before. So yeah.
was that scary?
Yeah. And it ended up being scary while I was doing my dissertation too, which is maybe another story we can get into, but yeah, like going through the IRB, and I had trouble recruiting participants at one point. So it was scary, but it all worked out in the end and it was fine.
Isn't it nice, like, to be this far removed from it where you can look back and be like,
and yeah, like it laugh.
It was tough, but now like I like where I am, you know?
Yeah. It is really nice because yeah, there were times when I was super stressed, but now it's, yeah, it's done and it is what it is. So yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Did you have a specialty in psychology for your master's?
Yes.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah. I think they're the same. My master's and my PhD were both in educational psychology.
Oh.
The reason that not all of my credits transferred to the PhD was because I was also interested in counseling psychology. So I had taken several classes in that didn't directly translate to the PhD, which was fine. But yeah, at that point in my life, I was considering, like, do I want to be a therapist or maybe a social worker or something like that? And even though I didn't really conduct my own research during the master's, I think I realized that I didn't want to go in that therapy counseling direction. I wanted to do more of the research potentially. So that was also helpful in sort of steering me ultimately in the right direction.
Yeah. Interesting. Check my questions. So you said your mentor or one of your professors suggested that you do the PhD. Is that who you ended up working with
for your thesis? That was my PhD advisor.
Yeah.
His name was Frank Farley. He recently retired from Temple University, but he was I guess he still is. I talk to him every once in a while. An incredible mentor in my life. And I think a little bit different maybe than your typical or at least some PhD advisors. So once I started the PhD program, again, I never had this dream of like staying in academia or becoming a professor. I just knew that I was super interested in what we were learning about and that I liked doing research. And he encouraged me in two pretty major ways. He encouraged me to study for my dissertation what I wanted to study and what I cared about. He never tried to push his own interest areas or topics on me. And that led to a dissertation that was very personally meaningful to me and that to this day I still love and look back on fondly. And he also encouraged me to do what I wanted with he never tried to tell me that I needed to stay in academia or that was the best thing or put that pressure on me, which I've heard, I know at even Temple and then beyond, that is sometimes a way that you're pressured. Yeah. And, you know, he would say to me, I've had PhDs go on to work for the FBI and for NASA and all these amazing places, and you don't have to limit yourself with what you can do. So I think both of those things were really, really cool. And I'm super, super grateful that I had an advisor like that to not only encourage me to do it in the first place, but then to also let me make my own path, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's similarly, I look back on it and I'm like, I think I had an unusually positive relationship with my advisor, which is great. Like, but you also hear the horror stories, you know, which is sad.
But yeah, for sure.
So tell me about your dissertation topic. What was that process like?
Yeah, so as I have briefly touched on, I was a serious athlete. I played Division I lacrosse, and during, you know, my high school years and college, that was really a majority of what I based my identity around and was more important to me really than anything else at that point in my life. And in college, I unfortunately tore my ACL twice in 4 years.
Oh, damn.
And something about it that was fascinating to me was that I had this same thing happen to me twice. And a lot of the variables around what happened to me were exactly the same. Mm-hmm. I was on the same team. I had the same surgeon. I was in the same training room. I had the same physical therapist. All of these factors were the same. And the first time it happened, it wasn't that big of a deal in the context of my life. It happened more towards the off season. I didn't really miss a season. I knew this was a thing that a lot of athletes, particularly female athletes, dealt with. And I sort of powered through it, mm-hmm. came back, had an amazing season. And then the second time it happened to me was the first game my senior year. Oof. So the biggest differentiating factor was that it sort of took this thing away from me that at the time was the most important thing in my life. And therefore, my reaction to this injury, which again, I had already done, all these factors were the same. But this time it really put me in a bad state mentally. You know, I was depressed for a while. It sort of fast-tracked this transition that I had to go through of not being an athlete anymore at a time when I wasn't really ready to accept that yet. And so I became super, super interested in essentially the psychological effects of physical things that happen to people. So for my dissertation, I studied the psychosocial effects of serious injuries in student athletes, which again, I think if I had had a different advisor at Temple, I'm not sure they would have even let me do that. But it was a really powerful thing for me to learn about personally. And I also ended up getting a grant from the NCAA because I found a pretty good gap in the literature on the subject.
That's awesome.
So then it was also really cool to feel like people who actually have the power to do things about this were actually reading what I wrote.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's a big question for PhD students is like, who's going to read this, you know? Like, I found a typo in my dissertation. Nobody else found that, you know?
Yeah, so, of course not, yeah.
Nobody read it, so.
Like, four people total read dissertations. Yeah. Exactly. Not for everyone, but that's how I felt. I was like, okay, my mom will maybe read this, my PhD advisors, and I don't know if anyone else ever will.
Yep. That's super cool. So you had that kind of impact, very tangible to you while you were working on it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to you.
Thanks. I know you're an athlete as well.
Yeah.
So
I am. And I coach now, and one of our players, she tore her ACL in the winter, this past winter, and she's going to be a senior this fall. So, you know, we'll see, but she's in the same boat. You know, it's like, do I, and it's so emotional. It's like, do you let it end your season or your career at this point, or do you power through? And it's a hard hill to climb for sure.
It's so tough. It breaks my heart anytime I see it happen because it's just such a serious injury and it just happens so easily. And it just sucks, especially when I see like younger girls going through it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Huge bummer.
More and more.
Yeah.
So what did you find? Is there anything that you can share?
Yeah, I mean, so this is one of the great and not so great things about psychology is like there is no answer, right? It's not like studying, you know, chemistry or biology or something like that. I didn't find a pathway to solve everyone's problems. But what I did learn and what is, I think, just a general way of thinking about life that I took away from my dissertation is there was basically this, I don't even remember, 40-point framework of all the different factors that impact how you react to an injury. And I sort of took this existing framework and built on it and studied it in a different way. So how you react to something bad that happens to you, like an injury, for example, is based on dozens of different factors in your life and how those all play with one another. But to add sort of another layer of complexity onto it is even the same factor being the same for two different people can impact them in different ways. So I'll just give a tangible example. When you get injured, one of the factors that will impact how you react to it is whether you've had a serious injury before. And that can either, but that's not like, there
but
isn't
it could go
even
either
a,
way still.
It could still go either way. Because being injured before could make you feel like I've done this before and I got through it before. Therefore, I know how strong I am and I know I can do this. Or it can be like, I can't believe I have to do this again. What a horrible experience.
I don't think I can. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so, and ultimately the biggest takeaway of all is that how things impact you depend on your, it's called a cognitive appraisal, or your personal interpretation of all the factors around what happened to you. And then as a result, your framing of the situation and what happened to you, which then impacts your coping mechanisms and your behaviors moving forward. So that's a very general explanation of it, but like that general thought can be applied to pretty much anything in life. You know what I mean? Like
sure.
Anything that happens to you, what really matters on it about it is your interpretation of what happened and how you react to it emotionally, physically, psychologically, and then that impacts your behaviors.
Yeah.
So I think it's, I like to think that in general, it's made me a more empathetic human knowing that, because I see people react to things all the time in maybe ways that are strange or different than I would. And I think just knowing the depth of that depth and aspect of the human mind makes me realize like there are so many factors and life experiences and all these things that impact.
Oh,
I don't know. Long-winded answer, but did you lose me again?
Yeah, no, you're fine. It was just a minute. A minute.
Okay.
Yeah.
Long-winded answer, but there was no like answer other than that general takeaway, I would say.
But think about, I mean, that's so cool. And think about it, you know, in the context of like, well, of course, like you're not going to be able to like give this answer to college programs, but you could certainly prepare players for going through this experience by educating them on the way their mind is going to handle it, right?
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I shouldn't say there were like no other takeaways, because obviously there were. There are there was a lot of stuff around like potential coping mechanisms that student athletes will use. And then
okay, sure.
I also looked into how it impacts them academically. And this was one of the big gaps in the research that I found, was that there's a ton of research on impact to injury. There's a ton of research on student athletes academically. There's also a lot of research on how like traumatic brain injuries impact cognitive functioning and stuff. But when you go through a serious injury, like tearing your ACL as a college athlete, that also will impact your schoolwork, because you're upset, you're not focused, you have physical therapy for 3 hours a day, all of these other factors. So I was also able to sort of make that connection that like, you don't have to hurt your brain in order for an injury to impact your schoolwork and your academics. So that was another sort of takeaway.
Yeah, that's a really good conclusion. So you kind of alluded to this earlier, but did you have fine get did you have trouble finding participants?
I did. This was very
sounds
stressful.
Like a very specific type of person that would be qualified.
Very specific. And I did qualitative data, so I didn't even need a big sample. I did an ethnography and then one-on-one interviews with student athletes. And for the interview portion, I had gotten my research grant. I had gone through the IRB, and my method of collection was, I knew there were a few hundred student athletes at Temple, and I knew a lot of them were injured, particularly because I did my ethnography in the athletic training room at Temple. And so I thought, well, I'll just find the student athletes that are injured and I'll just ask them to do my research and I'll post flyers and I'll ask their athletic trainers who I talked to multiple times at this point and all of that. And I think I didn't even end up, I think I only needed like 12 participants or something like so small compared to other research studies. And I got like 4.
Wow.
And it wasn't working. Like I was literally, if I saw someone wearing a Temple sweatsuit with like a broken leg on campus, I would like chase them down and be like, are you an athlete that's injured? Do you want to do my study? And they were like, who are you? Get away from me.
Can I trust you? Do you want money? Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't working. And because I had a grant, I was on a lot more strict timelines than like other PhD students that were in the same cohort generally as I was. And so I was really stressed because I didn't have that much time for data collection. So I had to resubmit a change in methodology to the IRB. I had to ask the NCAA if it was okay. And basically the new method that I went through was, can I use connections to college coaches that I know and I have a personal relationship with to find out who is injured on their team? And then they can connect me with like their athletic departments and their athletes to see if they would potentially be interested in. And that, so, you know, it took maybe 2 weeks of delay to get the new approvals. And then when I did it that way, I was able to recruit much more easily because I knew a lot of athletic trainers. I knew a lot of coaches. And so I think having that personal connection and meeting someone that they knew was legit and they could trust me and all of that. And then they would say to their students or someone on another team, like, hey, there's this research study. Do you want to talk about your experience with your injury? And a lot of times the answer was yes. Mm-hmm. So then once I did that, it worked out. But I remember during that time period when the recruiting was not going well, I was like not sleeping at night. I was like, I'm going to lose my grant. I'm not going to finish my PhD, which seems very dramatic now. But at the time I was really stressed about it.
I mean, it's all you can think about. And you've already spent so much time on something like a PhD to imagine like just like flunking out like that would be very stressful.
Yeah. Yeah. It was super stressed. So it worked out in the end, but, yeah, that was stressful at the time.
So just so I understand, you not only expanded your pool of people you could find applicants in, but you also were now going through sort of like a warm connection instead of just
chasing people around campus and flyers.
Yeah.
Okay. So I opened the pool and I went more through personal connections of coaches and athletic trainers who could then like connect me with their athletes. Yeah.
Did you specifically look at certain sports or where is it any sport?
No, it was open. One of the actual limitations of my dissertation was that I didn't have any, I forget the terminology, revenue producing sports, at least at the time before the new NCAA rules. Like, for whatever reason, I didn't get any basketball or football. Players, basically. But no, other than that, I had I don't remember exactly, but I had like two rowers, maybe two soccer players, two lacrosse players, a swimmer, maybe a volleyball player. I don't remember exactly, but it was like a total mix, male and female athletes. The definition for serious injury, I believe, was at least 3 weeks or more out of competition. So the injuries also ranged. I had one or two ACLs. I had a rower with like a rotator cuff injury. I had a soccer player who got blood clots from a sprained ankle. There was all over the place. But yeah,
it surprises me that 3 weeks is the threshold for that, because that, you know, I mean, I guess 3 weeks out of a season is a lot, but
I know it seems,
you know,
like
we have players that sit out 3 weeks all the time. You know, it feels
like from
standard.
A sprained ankle. Yeah. The people, even though that was the threshold, I found the people that I interviewed tended to be out longer than that. So maybe there was also some sort of, struggling to come up with the right phrase. Like the athletes themselves were self-selecting whether or not they thought their injuries were serious. And actually I did find in the ethnography portion of the research that athletes struggled with admitting how much pain they were in. I would ask them about their pain levels, or I would ask them about when they went to the hospital and they were asked, you know how they do those smiley face scales of like, how much pain are you in? And there was a lot of like recalibrating among the athletes of like initially being like, oh yeah, my ankle is like at a 9, and then be like, no, I'm sorry, it's not that bad. It's really just a 7 or something like that. So there was this interesting relationship with I'm off. That's what keeps interrupting the audio. Sorry, give me 1 second because it just keeps interrupting us.
No, you're fine.
Okay, it should not do that anymore from now on. Yeah, there was an interesting relationship between the athletes and admitting that they were in pain and not wanting to be in pain, but being in pain and tending to downplay that. So yeah, that was an interesting part of it as well.
Wow. Fascinating. I find this so interesting.
I know, really, it's interesting, right?
You know, it's especially since I'm still in the world of college athletics, you know, I see girls struggle with this and struggle with the pain thing and even struggle with like telling people they're injured because they don't want to disappoint or they want to play. You know, it's a very complicated thing.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, as interesting as that is, I could keep asking you questions, but I want to talk about what you did after your PhD. So what was that process like, finding your true path? Yes.
So eventually I did have to accept that I was an adult and I needed to find a job. So once I started getting towards the end of my PhD, I realized that I really liked the research part. And I also was pretty interested in generally this connection between the psychological and the physical. And my dad works at Novartis, a pharmaceutical company. And he told me when he looked at my dissertation research, you know, they do this type of research in pharma companies. You're kind of doing what's called a patient journey, not exactly, but this type of research where we want to understand what someone's going through, what's their quality of life, how it's impacting them, and all of that is something that they do at pharma companies. So you may want to pursue a healthcare type direction. And that was really a light bulb moment for me where I realized that there probably was a place for me outside of academia, but to do the type of research that I was interested in. So I ended up in my last year of my PhD doing an internship at Novartis in their medical affairs division. And then I also pursued a clinical rotation. So in my last semester, I was at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia working with kids being assessed for ADD or ADHD. And that was super interesting. I loved that experience. And yeah, I essentially realized that I was interested in this healthcare direction. So while I was at Novartis, I did a lot of networking and I would share my resume with people and say, here are the things that I'm good at. I don't really know what I want to do with my life, but with my background, what do you think I could do? And that's where I learned about the company that I'm at now. It's called ZS Associates, and it's a consulting firm that specializes in healthcare and the pharmaceutical industry. So I have been there now since I graduated. I graduated with my PhD in December of 2017, and I started at ZS in February of 2018. So it's been almost 5.5 years. During that time, I've worked with over a dozen different pharmaceutical companies, all different therapeutic areas, helping them solve all different sorts of problems. I've done market research. I've done patient research. I now am on a team that does a little bit of larger scale transformations, like how do we rethink our entire customer engagement model, or how do we reorganize this entire division to more align with our strategy. So I feel very fortunate to have sort of found this home where I'm doing research, it's in a practical setting, it's generally in healthcare and pharma. I am constantly learning new things because the projects rotate over time. So like I said, different clients, different therapeutic areas. So it's very challenging. And it's funny because I use a lot of skills from my PhD, yes. Do I feel like I use all of the psychology specific knowledge directly? Maybe not necessarily, probably in an indirect way, but I feel the connection is close enough between the two.
Yeah, I actually hear that a lot, that, you know, we specialize in something very specific for our PhD, but we don't, a lot of us don't end up doing that for our careers, but all the things we learned in the process are so applicable to what you're doing.
Yeah.
This might seem kind of harsh, but do you think, or I guess in your roles that you've done so far, is a PhD sort of required?
Sorry, I'm trying to distract her.
That's okay.
No, probably not. There are all different types of backgrounds at my company. We do have a lot of advanced degrees. There's actually an advanced degree club that we're in, and we talk about...
It's very exclusive.
Yeah. There's actually a lot of people in it, but yes, we do have an advanced degree club where we talk about like what's the transition from academia to consulting and things like that.
There you go. Very applicable.
Yeah. We have a lot of MBAs. There's a lot of people with masters in public health or things of that nature. So no, a PhD is not required. I don't know that I would have ever ended up at this company if I didn't get my PhD and I didn't follow the path that I was on. But I think for a lot of people there that know they're interested in that industry and healthcare and pharma, there are other ways into this type of work. But with that being said, I do think there are a lot of applicable skills from the PhD that definitely have helped me be successful over time.
Yeah. Fast-paced environments, like managing teams and research just in general. I mean, designing any research project is,
Yeah. Having in general a level of rigor and quality that was demanded of you in a PhD program, I think applies well in the business world. attention to detail, you know, being able to just power through things when they're difficult and just deal with it. Those are all skills that I think come from getting a PhD that help in, yeah, a more corporate environment.
Very cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that you enjoy your job. I love to hear that from people, that they like what they're doing. All right, so before I go to my three wrap-up questions, you did mention you were an athlete. What are your current hobbies as a working, a legitimate adult?
Unfortunately, one of the things that I don't love about lacrosse is that it's not a super easy pickup sport to play as an adult. There aren't exactly, you know, like lacrosse leagues everywhere as there are if you play tennis or soccer or basketball. So I don't play lacrosse too much anymore. I have gotten into running as an adult, which I think is an easier way of channeling the athletic energy and spirit that I very much still have. I can't say that I love running, but I like it. Yeah. I like it enough and I need the outlet enough. Like I've run a few marathons and a bunch of half marathons.
So there's a competitive aspect to it.
The competitive aspect and just the enjoyment of, you know, pushing your body to a certain limit and all of that. Hiking, now taking my daughter to the playground is something I do all the time. It's so funny how much you don't pay attention to playgrounds and then you have a kid and all of a sudden the most important stop is the playground.
I talk to my friends who have kids and they're like, yeah, when we were at the playground today, and I'm just like, do you go to the playground every day? Like, and all the same yes. one every day, and the kids are fine with it and they're just like, yep.
What yeah, you it's so funny the rate at which you go to playgrounds goes from 0 to 100. but yeah, and then I don't know, normal things like trying to stay in touch with old friends and getting dinner with people and trying to still have somewhat of a social life. My husband and I are good about, you know, giving each other the nights to go and do things with our friends so that we can keep our sanity. So that's important.
That's good.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. So my first of my last questions is,
yes.
We may have touched on this, but what was something challenging that you faced during your PhD?
Okay. I will tell a different story. I think one of the most difficult periods of the PhD is the end, when you are physically writing your dissertation. You are so close yet so far, and I, as I mentioned, I was under a certain time limit because of the grant that I was on, and so I had a certain number of months to write my dissertation, and like there's no more stalling. You have the data, you've done all the courses. And now you are just sitting in front of a computer and you know how many pages need to be written and it's very daunting. And you know that the next few months of your life are just going to be writing.
Yeah.
And that is not easy. I remember there was a very specific, like, I don't know if you know those Starbucks espresso cans, but I was obsessed with those and like this one specific kind of breakfast bar. And I had both of those things so often during writing my dissertation that to this day, I still cannot touch them because that was just like what powered me through just like sitting in front of a computer and writing for just like 5 hours every day.
Yeah.
For hours, some days more, some days less because I physically couldn't take it. That is really hard. And I think everyone who gets a PhD goes through that stage of it. And it's almost easy to forget that you did that, but that amount of writing, and again, the rigor and the standard of quality that are required for it, that's hard. It's probably the longest paper, well, maybe not if you stay in academia, but it's probably for me the longest paper I'll ever write in my life.
Same, dude. Same. I don't think it was even good, you know. It's, at the end, you're just like, I just need to finish this. So
you're like, someone just take this away from me because I can't deal with it anymore.
No, that was a good answer. That was a great answer.
Good.
All right, next question is, what advice would you give for yourself at the beginning of your PhD?
I know you sent me this question ahead of time. And I still need to think about it.
It's okay. Maybe something related to like going from your master's to your PhD, or like how to change your mindset, or
maybe like maybe just to believe in yourself that you can do it, because I remember, like I said, getting a PhD was never a dream of mine. It was more so I had a mentor who believed in me and encouraged me to do it and everything. And I definitely, many points throughout the PhD journey, was like, am I really the right person to be doing this? Am I really able to, are you sure that I'm able to do this? And it's easy to compare yourself to other people in your classes and think, I'm not as smart as that person who just went on a 3-minute monologue about some specific topic. But you can do it. And if you're in a PhD program and you've been accepted into the program, it means that you have proven that you can do it and that you have the ability to do it and that there are people there to support you. And even if you may think that the people next to you are smarter than you, it doesn't matter. You should be there too. And you just got to keep going and get through it.
Snaps. Snaps for that. That was great. Snaps.
It's true. I remember many times being like, am I really getting a PhD? And are you sure that you signed the right person up for this task?
Yeah, especially when you come from like an undergrad in a different like field, and you know, I don't know, I feel like people do feel that a lot. But like you said, like the support around you can be sort of the difference between really, really doubting yourself and succeeding. So
for sure.
Excellent advice. All right, last question is, amongst all of the challenges that you faced, what do you have a good memory from your time as a PhD student?
This is sort of a few memories, but I loved the times that I got to present my research and talk about it to other people. I ended up presenting it 3 different times. So we had to at least submit our dissertation to a conference in order to graduate. And so, but you didn't have to necessarily present at one, because that was sort of out of their control. So I was like, well, if I just have to submit my research somewhere, I'm going to submit it to Harvard. Because it will look good.
As you do.
Because it will look good that I even tried. And it got accepted. And I got to present my dissertation on a panel at the Harvard Graduate School Student Conference or something like that. And I was shocked that my dissertation was accepted. I literally was just submitting it to check a box. And then there I was presenting it on a panel. There was a few other people from Temple there. And that is just an experience I will always remember, because I never would have thought that would have happened. And then I got to present it. I just did a poster at the Association for Applied Sports Psychology. And that was in Arizona, which was great and beautiful. And then finally, when I shared back my dissertation with the NCAA, at the end of the grant, I went to Indianapolis and I presented it to them, and we talked about why it's important and how you can support student athletes. And all three of those experiences, I will always remember just making new friends, meeting other graduate students, feeling like I couldn't believe that I was surrounded with people who were so smart and so cool and whose research I thought was much more interesting than my own. But it was just really fun and really cool. And I feel like that aspect of the PhD program was just really special. And I don't know that it will necessarily be replicated, you know, in another way in my life. So I loved that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's true. I mean, when are you ever going to be presenting something that's all yours, that you are the expert on, in a room full of really smart people? Like, yeah. Cool feeling, right?
Yeah, it was really fun. So yeah, I love that.
All right, well, that wraps up my questions. Anything I missed that you wanted to chat about?
I don't think so. You covered it. I don't think this deeply about my PhD anymore. You know, it's been a while, so it is actually pretty fun to think about what the experience was like and reminisce about the good times and the times that I cried and thought, I can't do this.
Yeah, I'm glad. Sometimes when I ask people I went to school with, they're like, oh, I don't know if I can revisit that. You know, like, I don't want to think about it, you know, but I think once you're far enough removed, it's good to look back and, you know, I hope you enjoyed kind of thinking back to some of your outcomes and in a project that you haven't thought about for a while, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, arguably the best part about getting your PhD is once it's done, you have it forever. And you can
those three letters.
And whenever you feel like being a doctor, you can because you've earned it.
That's an excellent point.
And no one can ever take that from you. So that's pretty cool, you know? So, yeah.
Very true. Well, Byrne, Dr. Byrne, thank you for your time.
Yeah, of
course.
It was
a pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, this was so fun. Thank you.
Thanks to Byrne for coming on the show. If you or someone you know wants to be interviewed on Impact Factor, feel free to reach out by Instagram and follow us for updates at Impact Factor Pod. Thank you all for listening and have a great week.